Hello, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is Blake Ruby from San Antonio. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. I hope you're having a great day. Here in San Antonio, it was raining earlier today, and all of a sudden the sun has come out. It's a really beautiful day so far, but then it's going to rain later on. I hope you all had a really pleasant week. I had a good week myself. Every day is a good day, you know, to be alive, enjoying life. And at nighttime, it's great to be able to go outside and look at stars up in the sky and know that the universe is a tremendously large place, so huge. Anyway, I've got Doug, one of the hosts of BBS Radio, with me out there. We talked last week, and I've asked him if he will come back on my show this week and talk with us about whatever comes to mind. I do have some things written down, but I'd like to just get to know Doug a little bit better. And so let me welcome Doug. Doug, are you out there?
I am. Hi, Blake.
Hi, Doug. How have you been?
Oh, it's been a crazy time here for BBS Radio TV. So many changes.
Radio and TV, just adding that word TV sounds even more, you know, adds a little touch of excitement because TV is like the ultimate medium.
Right.
Now you're into both radio and TV. That just takes you to a higher dimension, if you will. Right.
Yeah, we're even trademarking it. We trademarked BBS, we've trademarked BBS Radio, and now we're trademarking Radio TV. Nobody uses those two words together.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Yes. Could you tell me how the TV works? How does that TV part work, if you could, please?
Oh, sure. We have people that use StreamYard, which is just a software that engages your camera right on your computer, or the people that use Zoom. That's Zoom's really good. StreamYard's even better on some level. It doesn't have quite the capability Zoom does for participation per se, but it's a great system. So people use Zoom and they use StreamYard, or they just use the camera on their phone. You have to have some sort of software, of course, that allows you to stream, but we can use almost any software. And then we plug it into a computer, and then we re-pull it into another computer that takes the various parts, like some person might want to use one system and another person using a different system, and we can put those systems together because we have multiple computers on our stations, right? So we pull those streams and we put it in, assemble it, and we kick it back out. And it's we have a high quality. You know, we're usually taping at about a 1980 by 1020, which is cable TV ready. That might be hard to believe, but cable TV. Just think it. You remember when you had the TVs that would come out with 2K, and now it's 3K, and then 4K, like 4,000 pixels, right? Or 6,000, maybe they're up to now. I don't know where they're at now. But the light, the first version, like the 2K, that's kind of where we are at. So we have a picture that's capable of going to cable TV. And that's great. We would really like to move into that kind of a market if we can. I think it will, right now, the most expensive thing about owning networks is your content. But here on the internet, we have millions of people creating content, and they're prepared to give away their content. Now imagine how much it costs to do a rerun of Gilligan's Island, right? You might pay, I don't know, let's say $10,000. Well, you could literally be getting programming all day long for free on the internet. The problem that the world is having is there's no real database that really filters it based on inputs by a network. Like if you were a network and you wanted to fill some time, there might be criteria. Like the criteria would be, when was the show created? You know, is it live? Is it a day old, a week old, a month old, right? Another criteria, what's the topic matter? You know, what is it, social sciences or is it sports? Or third criteria, maybe who are the guests, right? But imagine if you're dealing with millions of shows being produced regularly and a database can filter through all that and you could say, based on certain parameters, that you could pull this sort of content into your cable station. That could be a really big thing. Now, 6 months, maybe a year ago, the cable networks really opened up. You know, you have cable TV, and then below that, you have UHF TVs. You know, you see these antennas, and that's in the breadbasket. A lot of in the breadbasket area, even in California, there are millions of people that still use antennas. And generally what they require is local information. To get in on those networks, you have to be providing some sort of a local information or news. But once you get into those networks, there's millions and millions and millions of households that can watch it. And they were limiting people on how many stations there could be at certain frequencies, but now they've literally opened up wide. So an average person can go in and buy a time block on station 1005, call it, in, I don't know, some part of Arizona. And let's say you bought that time block. Well, now you need to fill it with content. And most people don't want to do that because the content can be very expensive. I believe that in the future, we're going to drive content to that regular market. Or it's going to disappear because it's just too costly. I mean, the internet provides a much lower cost for content and the development of programming. So, and we're really, you know, the mainstream, as you can tell, whether it's TV or radio, you know, when you're even radio, for example, if you have FM signal, you might spend $1 million, $1.5 million on your towers that only reach a certain area, let's say just a city. So you're limited. You're limited in your geography. You're also limited because there's no way to tell who's really listening. It's like TV. There's no real way to tell how many people are listening to your program. It's kind of based on a rating system where they send out data to millions of households and say, did you watch it? And will you be one of those participants that tell us what you watch? But there's no instant knowledge. Like on the internet, I can literally figure out who's watching it, what system they're using it, where in the world you are. All this data is instant. So there's limitations to the old way, old media. But new media doesn't have those limitations. So it's even a better environment for advertisers, right? Advertisers. That's really appealing because they can know how many people really are listening. And this environment is changing so fast, it's amazing. And I think that we can move into that environment and, you know, there'll be crossovers. And we're in a good position to do so. So we're excited about the future. And we're really developing our systems now to be ready for that. We're literally spending a lot of money updating our streaming web server, which we just finished, updating our current website server, our content managed structure, PHP, Apache, MySQL, which kind of runs everything, and your content managed structure, which is what you utilize to input data. All those things are going to the highest levels. And that's going to enable us to have more visitors, to be able to stream. Because right now we stream a lot of information and the bandwidth to stream it and the amount of dedicated processing capability. Let's say you have 1,000 networks wanting to pull your data all the time. Well, every time they come to your network and they knock on the network door and they say, what's new, what's new, what's new? Like a little computer robot, that's a process. There's only so many processes your computer can do at any one time. So we want to increase that capability and allow ourselves to literally get out there further and wider. So that's, and then, of course, we're upgrading our Our theme was, we've been working with the same content managed structure for 14 years, almost 15 years, with the same content managed structure. That's a long time. You know, you think that things always have to be updated. They do. But the house might not. Like, maybe everything in the house is updated, but the house itself hasn't been updated. So that's what we're in the process of doing now. And we hope to launch in early July with all of this.
Doug, can you, what's your last name, Doug? I was thinking of that earlier.
Newsom. It's like Newsom. Gavin Newsom, like the California governor's name. There's no E on it.
Okay.
N-E-W-S, like news, and om, O-M, Newsom.
Newsom.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, let me ask you this. You said you can tell when people are tuning in from anywhere in the world. I mean, can you tell, like, people are listening from Australia or Russia, China, different countries around the world?
We have listeners from every province and every country on the globe, over 207.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And then they're listening at different times of the day. For them, you know,
right.
Imagine some don't even have TV or regular radio. The internet is such a tremendous medium to be able to connect with other people, maybe learn English.
Right. It's changing the globe. We're all connecting. We're starting to see what it's like across the globe, who our neighbors are that we've never even really known. What are they thinking? What are they like? What's their culture like? All this is coming to the forefront. We're starting to become more aware of the world on a global level. That's maybe why there's such chaos right now. This communication has really changed so much, and it's going to change even more. I mean, there's a lot of parts of the world that can't get internet. But people like Elon Musk, he's put up, I think, 1,000 satellites already. I think he's shooting for 4,000 satellites. His new company, Starlink, I believe he calls it. It's just amazing. A man who's a private company at this point, even though he plans to take it public. I'd love to grab the IPO. But he's literally putting satellites into space that can beam signals down to any part of the country, even if you're in rural America and you don't have internet access. And that's going to, you know, it's just amazing. Sooner or later, everybody's going to have internet capability.
Yes, I like it. If it was just, you know, me having my show and then being able to access the archives just to hear my own voice, that would be sufficient. But to know that there's people out there listening, that adds an extra bit of excitement. It's almost like the icing on the cake, so to speak, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, think of the future. What do you envision the new media will be like? I mean, are we just looking at radio, TV, where people are talking and creating these, or we're having 3D environments? You know, Oculus is coming out pretty big lately, where you might even have, we have a new show that's coming on. It's called Economic Vampires. It's a bunch of coders that have created 3D environments around the Oculus, and they literally want to develop TV talk shows, radio talk shows within this environment. So you could literally be walking on the moon, right, and create a world there, and have all sorts of advertisements and everything and feel like you're in a 3D environment, but it's a talk show. Maybe you're sitting on the stage with a guest across from you like you'd see on normal TV, but it's more like a cartoon character. Right now, it takes a lot of processing power to move characters on a screen and then take that signal and drive it to you so you can see it on your computer. And the processing power that takes is a lot. So it's more like, you know, they have characters, but you can make characters look like you do. You could even superimpose your face on those characters so they just look almost exactly like you do. And when you're in this environment, it feels like you're in the environment. These Oculus really make you, when you get up high in the sky and you could have vertigo, right? Simply due to wearing this headset that puts you in this world. So that's moving into the future. You know, everybody, sooner or later, you're not going to have your own Facebook environment, but you might have your own 3D cafe where your friends are all have their Oculus on and they're meeting you in this 3D cafe. That's, and everybody has their own little 3D world, which is limitless, almost limitless. That's going to be a part of something that's moving ahead. I also see individuals like yourself that are their own channel. I mean, let's call it the Blake Ruby channel. And you can click on a button and you're literally presenting yourself, video and TV, no matter where you are in the world, 24 hours a day. Just you what was that one show where you had a guy on TV 24/7? I forget what it was called. Truman Show or something like that. Well, I see that into the future, but even more. Like, let me give you an example. You are you press button for live and you're live and everybody sees you, and let's say it takes up the upper left-hand portion of the screen. Well, to the right of it, it might have your top five stocks you just purchased. Oh, yeah. So I can know what stocks you've just purchased because I want to know more about you. Oh, the last five books you just read. The last five games you just played. The last five newspapers you've subscribed to. The last five talk shows you listened to. Right? The last five products you just bought. Now, the reason I say that is because you become a wealth channel, and following you, I then, maybe I really, really like you, and so I want to kind of follow you into those things, and that's going to be huge for advertising purposes, because each one of those books that you recommend might offer you money. All of the different, I call them profit centers. But I can see that moving into the future, especially with influencers. I don't know why nobody's done this yet. Another thing, you could be on TV wearing a jacket, and I could hover over the jacket with my mouse, and automatically I could be buying it right then and there. Ooh, I love that jacket this guy's wearing. Click. Ooh, it's bought here. I'll buy it. So, and then the advertising can be running underneath it constantly. You don't need to actually stop the sports game, right, to watch this advertisement come up and then wait until you, and sometimes we miss part of the sports game, right? Because they're coming back in the middle of it because they got to go to network breaks. Well, on the internet, we can have those advertisements floating all around it without interrupting the program itself. Right now, cool. We're stopping and starting the program, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me in my head. It's not the smartest way yet. But these other things that I have in my head and I'm envisioning, I see them coming. I don't know if we'll be able to dominate in any one of those spheres, but I know kind of where this is all going to progress to. And, you know, it's going to change a lot. It's going to change everything.
Doug, you know me. I've been with BBS Radio now for about 3 or 4 years. I can't remember exactly when I started, but I talk about my subjects, contact with extraterrestrials out there, and I was thinking, you know, they say there's a cover-up of information, but it doesn't matter if they're ever going to come out of the closet, so to speak, and tell us about what happened in the past. I mean, we don't really need that. I mean, there's so much more than that we can think about logically, and we're there, you know, as far as realizing the universe, you know, that we're a part of something that is so tremendously large out there. And there are, I was looking at on YouTube pictures of galaxies that the Hubble Space Telescope captured, you know, back in the, I think, 80s or 90s. There's one picture of like a cluster of galaxies out there that are the farthest ever captured on a photograph. And this cluster of galaxies is like maybe 50 to 100, can't remember exactly. But, I mean, a galaxy in and of itself is a tremendously large place, you know. I was comparing it in my mind to, like, here in the United States, we have, what, maybe 300 million people living. If you considered, like, every person, I know there's some homeless people, may God bless them, and I'm sorry that, you know, that they are homeless, but there's a lot of people that have houses. If you were to envision a family living in the United States in a separate house, in every area of the United States, every state, every city, every town, a house, that's kind of like what our galaxy alone is like, you know, because there's a couple of 100 million stars in the galaxy. And then we don't know, like, neighbor next door here, we haven't seen the family, but we know the house is there. It's like the same thing, you know, a planet. I mean, there's no doubt, should be no doubt in anybody's mind right now that there are other planets out there. The Kepler Space Telescope is showing these new planets. Every day they discover more and more. And so you compare a house to a planet where people, some sentient beings, some civilization is living. Well, we can see their houses, but we don't know if anybody's home. Well, hello. Should be logical, really, you know. You don't create houses without the families being inside them. You know, houses aren't created. I don't know if this is a really good example, but I thought it was pretty cool. I first thought about that is a good way to describe that the universe is such a huge place. I mean, just huge, you know, beyond comprehension, huge. And even Einstein knew, you know, he was way ahead of his time anyway. He said that, you know, the universe has to be teeming with life. Anybody with any intelligence has to realize that. Anybody who is intelligent has to realize that. And I like to talk about one day making contact with an extraterrestrial species. But there's one reason they are not contacting us, that they're not landing on the front house of the front lawn of the White House, or they're not walking down the street and greeting us, is because they know that we're a violent species. I mean, they know our past, our history, the wars that we've had. And we're getting away from that. You know, we're progressing, we're evolving, not only technologically, but spiritually. But still, it's something that, if you were them, and you knew that the human race is not even convinced that they're not alone in the universe, that some people still think that some of their civilization, you know, from an extraterrestrial perspective, still think that we're alone in the universe, even after Columbus, you know, even after Copernicus, some people still think we're alone. And there are so many advantages to making contact with an extraterrestrial species. Once you get past that fear, you know, that deer in the headlights stare, you know, that hypnotized kind of feeling, then you have to begin to appreciate that these sentient beings, no matter what they look like, they're still kind of like people, you know. They have minds, they have their bodies, they have hearts, more than likely, most of them, maybe two hearts, three hearts, I don't know. They have some kind of blood flowing through their veins, like us, you know. And they're more peaceful than us, you know. They're obviously more peaceful, and they've been traveling around the universe.
Well, you're making an assumption. You're making an assumption that time and technology brings about a more peaceful understanding. If these races are so old, they've got to be more spiritually endowed. I would say that's true, and the opposite is true. Meaning, I think that there's probably races out there that are, because if you believe that there's life out there, it would be insane, you know, it'd be, you know, small thinking to believe that that life out there isn't going to the further extremes of evil. It will exist. It does exist. And I think you're going to have a smorgasbord from A to Z. It's just, it's kind of like the light spectrum. What we see right now, we see. But, you know, in both directions, right and left of that light spectrum, there's something more. And just like good and evil, we might see evil that we can't even comprehend. It's just so evil. And goodness that we can't comprehend because it's just so good. Based on our limited capability, I think that there is so much more on both directions. And I often think, you know, if there was a species, an alien species, and they were looking, you know, why don't they interact with us? You know, and you might say, well, because we're such a violent species. But, you know, a lot of the stories that are being told about aliens, whether they be on Mars, right, some of the planets on the solar system, they were just as destructive based on these stories, if not more so, than we have ever been, right? So does that mean they've evolved somehow over the past few million years to be even not so destructive? I don't know.
Well, I think that's it. That's the answer. You know, I mean, we're in the outward spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy, you know, I assume that the Big Bang theory is the most widely accepted theory of how the material universe is presently in existence, you know, and so logically one would have to think that from the beginning, after the Big Bang, then one solar system was created and then another and another, and then one galaxy was formed, and then a new galaxy was formed in that similar way.
Right.
And now we're approximately 15 billion light years from the center of the universe. And these civilizations like us, who were living on planets that were created millions of years before us, have had that advantage of time to evolve themselves and travel around the universe. And even, I think, in accordance with a book I read called The Contact Has Begun, I don't know if I mentioned that to you before, there is a race of dominant species out there that look like the gray aliens, if you will, with big dark eyes and pointed ears, about 5 feet tall, and they have been traveling throughout the universe for 290 million years. I think that's the number. And still, they're coming up to solar systems that are uncharted. Can you imagine that? Because the material universe is expanding as we speak, and the edges of infinite space are out there, which is a hard thing to comprehend. And I would like to see in my lifetime that we make contact, you know, because I see there's a lot of fear there and ambiguity in regard to certain information that we have. It doesn't matter that the governments keep it disclosed, you know, for maybe our own better purposes, if you know what I mean.
Sure. I'd love it.
Panic or not being able to handle the truth.
I think it'd be very exciting. I think we're at a time where that may occur. I'd love to see it happen. Almost every night I go to bed, when I meditate, I send a beam of my thoughts out into space, and I always invite, and I kid you not, I say, if there are extraterrestrials out there, I would love to meet you. And I do this almost every night when I'm fogging my eyes and I'm going through into my head and I'm moving out my energy, and my energy is always wanting to participate with dimensional realities or beings on other dimensional realities or even alien species within our solar system. I'm always looking forward to having some sort of an experience. I myself have not had an alien experience before that I know of. But I would cherish it.
Well, you're not the only one. Dr. Stephen Greer, who I revere, he's one of the most brilliant minds out there in regards to extraterrestrial species and their technology. And did you meet him? I think you told me that you met him.
I haven't met him, but we've interviewed him before on various shows on the network.
He is just a fantastic, so intelligent man. And I think he's climbed out on a limb, you know, to take on the governments of the world and disclose what they know about extraterrestrials. And we need people like him, and may God bless him to protect him, you know, because you've heard about Men in Black. And
sure.
And then, so there's people out there that don't want us to evolve as a civilization. But let me ask you, Doug, all the shows that you have, is there anybody else like me that talks about some of the stuff that I do?
Many.
Wow. Awesome.
Many, many, many. I'd say that's probably a dominating theme on our network.
What about angels?
All of it.
I know there's psychic mediums. And,
it, from A to Z.
Anything that comes. Yeah. What could you maybe talk a little bit about the different shows that you have?
Oh, please. Well, we have a show called Out of This World Radio with Ted Marr. He speaks about this sort of information all the time. A very good program. One of the most watched programs on our network by far. He deals with UFOs. He deals with, life after death, spiritual beings, almost everything from A to Z, and it's a really good show. Another show that deals with it more in a logical sense, but still deals with it, Why Life Is. I could go on. Almost every day you're going to find two or three shows which deal with this sort of subject matter. And, different parts of it, but, you know, basically in the spiritual kind of metaphysical realm. It's a great network. Yes. I love this network because of that sort of information, which has always appealed to me, by the way, since I was a boy.
Yes. And you have people that like to talk politics, right? You had a senator before, I think, even before my show came
right.
on, like
City
an hour
senator.
Or two before.
Mm-hmm. He's been with us 10 years,
yep.
Shadow Politics,
wow.
Sunday at 4. And he always wanted to do radio as a young man, as a boy, and found our network, and he's very, very good. We actually have an archbishop that does a radio show. I really don't know of any other TV or radio network, even mainstream, in the United States of America that can boast of either, and yet doing regular talk shows, and yet we have both. We really have a great lineup of talk shows, comparable to almost anything out there. And this network, we just love that. I mean, when you can speak to a senator through our network who really wants to bring the left and the right and together and discuss,
Amen.
You know, be able to discuss different points of view. You don't get that today so much in politics. I mean, everybody's so in their own little corner. But Senator Michael Brown, his emphasis, by the way, is to get D.C. statehood because he really believes everybody should have a vote. Even though I'm more leaning towards to the right side of the political spectrum, because I'm more a little bit more conservative. I do believe in the Constitution. I know that we can debate about a lot of these things. My opinion probably disagrees with him on many points. But there are he's such a beautiful being, and one of the points he does believe in is giving everybody the vote. And I would totally agree with that. And that's really been his claim to fame, is to move that discussion ahead. And today I think that discussion has moved further ahead than at any time in history. I really truly do hope Puerto Rico and D.C. do get statehood, or at least in some way maybe they take the area and they cede it off to, I don't know, Maine or wherever they want to, but people do eventually get the right to vote, because it's sad when you're paying your taxes and you don't have that ability. Mind you, I'm also a believer that the vote was stolen. I believe that the hijinks that were played in this last election were nefarious, and should be looked into, because I want to believe that my vote counts. I really do. And if there's a question mark, we should at least look into the fact, the idea that there's, you know, there are people out there that believe the same way, and, you know, satisfy that understanding so we all believe our vote can count. But,
well, I would like that too. And I'm not ashamed to say that I voted for Mr. Trump because I like some of the things about him. I mean, I thought he did some good, you know. Plus, he was always under attack, it seemed, from day one, which was unfair, I felt.
Right.
You know, with the impeachments, I didn't think were justified. But I still don't know why, after 6 months, they haven't found any evidence of wrongdoing or election fraud.
Right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I look at, you know, Trump's family, and his kids are brought up without drugs. They're not alcoholics. They don't do, you know, the sort of things that we see Biden's family doing. Now, your children are a reflection of your upbringing. It tells a lot about who you are as a mother and a father, if I can use those terms. So that alone was a reason to look at Trump differently. No matter what the media portrays, you know, they don't tell the whole story on Biden's part of the family. And that, I don't know why. And maybe, and in today, I think that the media is a part of the corporatists. I mean, you have corporations out there that are working with the media, and the dominant players are really moving towards the Democratic theme. And the Democrats used to be the party of the people, the party of the poor. But now, really, the statistics show they're the party of the rich. They are. So they've changed 180 degrees, and it seems like they do whatever it takes to move forward their agenda with power. You know, no matter how that power is being used, even abusively, they move their agenda forward. So they've figured out that that's the way to do things, and nobody's really standing up to that. And I think the country's moving in the wrong direction as a result. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
I respect that.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah, I believe, look, I voted Democrat in the past. I voted Republican in the past. Whoever is the best candidate. But,
yeah. You
know, I just don't see Biden as a good candidate. I don't think he has the mental capability at this time in his life. Maybe he did when he was younger. He doesn't any longer. And that's not a good thing. Also, you might not like Trump. And yeah, as a human being, I wouldn't want to do business with him because he'd probably crush me. No, and he wouldn't think a hoot about doing it. And that might not be a good character quality. But darn, I wouldn't want to compete against him. And if I had to have a company to run, I'd put him on the top of the company. And why? Because he fights to win. And so having a person like that, for America's interests, he would have fought to win for America. And that made him a very powerful proposition as a president. Yet in Joe Biden, I don't see that. I don't see that even with his family. I see that they acquiesce to countries that are more socialistic bent, even Marxist bent, even communist bent. Now, not to say that those countries are bad in total. It's the people that run those countries that, you know, want the power. But I really think that we've got to, you know, think about these things more before we start doing business with these countries full scale, because ultimately they have one goal, and that's power and domination. And if America continues to do the things it's doing and acquiesce to that understanding, everything's going to change. People are going to wake up 50 years in the future, and they're not going to have the same liberties. Now, they might not even know what that means. Like 100 years ago when we could do certain things, and today we can't. We don't even know what those things are because we've been indoctrinated into our culture so much that we just think it's normal. And maybe, you know, 100 years in the future, everybody thinks communism's just normal. It's democracy to a con. You know, we'll be calling it democracy, but it's really, you know, a form of communism because we won't know any better. And that's kind of a shame.
What do you think about the insurrection, Doug?
I think you only had Republicans that were killed. Isn't that interesting? No Democrats. Only had Republicans. No. You had Pelosi being told to, even by President Trump, you know, there should be more people and guards there to protect the Capitol. But Pelosi didn't do any of that. She didn't take any of those recommendations. She waited until the whole thing was said and done and then made those recommendations to the extreme. And that just surprises me. I don't like double standards. I don't like it when politicians get out there and say, no guns, and yet they have people around them, Secret Service around them, protecting them with guns. Or politicians that say, oh, you shouldn't have walls on the border, and yet you look at their homes and they're gated up and they have walls all around their home. Stuff like that just doesn't make sense to me. Politicians that run out there and want to fight for the environment, but they're flying around in their own private jets. You know, it's just a double standard, and this is how I see politics today. They say one thing, they do another, they lie, and there's no accountability. It just doesn't make any blooming sense. And I think most of America sees this, yet they don't know what to think about it.
Well, it seems like politics is the best game in town. You know, the competition that's going on is so fierce and cutthroat, when they should be working together, you know, reaching across the aisle. John McCain did that pretty well. You know, what we need really, not only in the United States, but around the world, I think there should be a world government, I believe, run by very wise men who aren't influenced by money or power, who are only looking out for the welfare of the people. That's what really matters, not the competition going on between the Republicans and the Democrats, because it never changes. One administration gets into power, the other administration is automatically at their backs, at their throats, trying to knock them down, destroy them.
Right.
And it goes on and on.
On and on.
And they don't do the right thing.
Right.
They're staying with the party lines, you know. Ask them to do the right thing. They might sometimes, but sometimes they don't.
Well, think if you're a politician.
In and of itself, that's wrong.
If you're a politician, this is where the morality changes. Because if you're in politics, you've got to deal. And the deal is, you know, for an example, you want to do something, but I want to do the opposite. But we make a deal. So in this deal, I'm going to get a little bit of good for a little bit of bad. Okay? That's, you know, we're accommodating each other. But with that accommodation, I no longer think of right or wrong. I no longer have that concept because I wouldn't want to deal with it. If I thought what you were doing is wrong, it shouldn't be done. But because I have to make a deal, I have so much bad with so much good. So it becomes a form of compromise, right? And so the idea of right and wrong no longer is a picture. It's all about the deal. The deal. The deal. So politicians don't have that same sort of an ethical adherence that you and I might, right? Because they're in a structure that doesn't, you can't do anything with that kind of a understanding. You've got to kind of compromise good and bad. So it
must be tough. Or at least in the beginning they felt that way. You know, when they got voted in, you know, they campaigned, you know, to do right, just to do good. They get voted in to go to Washington and all of a sudden, it's a cold slap in the face of reality, or a cold splash of water in the face of reality, you know. And you don't, my God, you don't want to go against what some of your same party members believe in, because you'd be ostracized, you'd be banned, you'd be ignored, ridiculed.
Right.
Look what happened with Liz Cheney.
Right.
You know, I mean, she voted her own conscience, what she thought was the right thing. And she was justified, I believe, in feeling that way, you know, because Mr. Trump's remarks were kind of, what's incendiary, or what's the right word? He kind of incited that, from what I saw, and other people too, who were up on the stage that day in combat by trial. Rudy Giuliani said that, and then Mr. Trump could have said, you know, stand down, you know, everybody, don't do this, please, but he didn't. You know, he didn't condemn it at all, not even afterwards. In fact, he got on television, he said, you're very special, I love you, to those same people who were, you know, destroying government property who, I know that something got killed, I'm sorry for that, but they also, they were interviewing a police officer who was on CNN the other night, who was knocked unconscious, and so he described what happened to him and some of his fellow police buddies. You know, police should never have to go through that. I mean, I understand, you know, we've got some problems with police and black people, African-American people, but police have a tremendously difficult job, and they don't get paid enough, and they're kind of like gods in a way. You know, they have that power and authority, and they're always trying to do the right thing, and it's hard to do it, you know, and it requires a tremendous amount of bravery and courage to be a police officer.
Right. My brother's son is a police officer.
Who is?
My brother's son. My twin brother's son.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is scary. It's scary seeing him want to go into that occupation. Because today, people will spit on you for being, you know, a police officer or want to hurt you. Yeah, it's a... I didn't expect to see that in my lifetime. And yet, it's occurring. I don't know what to think about it. And I think that the media, it incites this. It's almost like the media today is creating this division because they say there is division. So we're all in our head going division, division, division. And it's creating a real problem. I mean, the media could say, no, they're, you know, we all love each other more often, but they don't. They create an environment which is antagonistic for one side to the other, and this is playing out.
Right.
I wish we could hold media to more account.
Yes, it has become really politicized. We watch CNN mainly around our house. My wife, she prefers that, and my stepdaughter also. Me, I used to watch Fox News sometimes. Now I just prefer not to watch any news at all.
Right, I don't watch it at all anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, my son too. I mean, you know, what happened to the good old days when people just used to sit around and listen to the radio? But my son, he kind of told me, like, the way it is, you know, he feels the same way. And he says, Dad, I can't deal with,
right,
you know, the negativity that's going on.
Right.
And I remember one time when I was living in Cleveland, I was stationed at the Cleveland Military Entrance Processing Station with the Army. And I didn't watch hardly any TV at all for the 3-year tour I had there. And I honestly think I was a happier person because I used to do more reading, you know, with that extra time,
sure,
not watching television. I read more books. I did more writing. And I felt I was better for it. Now I can't avoid it, you know, because, you know, there's other people living in the house that have their desires, you know, that, and I don't want to take that away from them. They want to watch TV, you know, like down here in the living room, that's mainly my stepdaughter and grandchildren come and watch the TV, you know, so they watch CNN a lot, but they also watch movies. And that's just the way it is with the news stations, you know, they're in competition with each other. It's big money, you know.
Big money, yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting about the media. It's become such a big part of our lives. When I was a boy, I can remember growing up, my dad loved to watch the news. That's what he did. He came home, he watched the news. And I remember hating it, absolutely hating it. Growing up as a teenager, I couldn't even imagine why anybody would sit there and want to watch the news. And yet here I am now in my 50s, and I find myself, I read a lot. I don't watch a lot of news, but I read a lot because I want to scan everything really quickly, right? I'll read 3 or 4 times a day, I'll check out 15 sites, and I'll just scan everything. Some of the articles I'll read, but it's a quick thing that I do just to kind of stay up on everything. But it's kind of an addiction. What's going to happen tomorrow? Who's going to bomb who? Who's going to hate somebody else? And yet,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of it's like an ongoing saga story, and every day you're getting another piece of it, and it just... That's what the news has become. It's become very sensational. They draw you in,
yeah,
And you just becomes a part of your day. And yeah, it's very upsetting. I don't think I read a day goes by that I don't read the news and go in my head, gosh, duh. And inside I feel angst. That shouldn't be the case. It's probably like not very healthy either.
Yes, right. All that negativity. I like the people. I like some of the personalities. You know, I respect them as human beings. You know, I understand they have a job. They have to report what they're told to report. But some of the things they talk about, you know, it's just there's so much negativity and very little positivity. You know, like maybe some good news stories. You know, what's going on with other people. That's what I want to hear. You know, what's going on with their lives. And it's getting better, I think. You know, I've seen some improvement in commercials, too. But all that negativity, yeah, that's not good. Prefer not to, you know, watch a lot of it. I like YouTube. That's what I've been exploring a lot recently. There's so many videos in there, different kinds of things. I've been watching people that go camping, especially in the wintertime, you know, in the Arctic North or somewhere, you know, where it's really cold. And Bigfoot, I've been watching a lot of videos on Bigfoot, people sailing across the ocean, you know, on a sailboat. Just getting in touch with real people who are doing real things, you know, that's what it's about.
Right.
And, yeah. Well, and music also, you know, concerts. I was exploring one man who I used to listen to back in the 70s by the name of Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush. And I'm always interested in really good guitarists, you know. In my opinion, some of the greats were Eddie Van Halen, you know, may God rest his soul, and Joe Satriani, and Jeff Beck. You know, I'm a guitar kind of person. Mm. I love to hear some really good electric guitar or acoustic, and bands also. Frank Marino, he's, in my opinion, if maybe one of the best, if not the best. But he's not on the big stage like some of these others are or were, and so he didn't get that recognition. He's actually from Canada. And he's a legend now, but he didn't make it to the big time because for some reason, you know, some people don't. You would think that they deserve to make the big time, but they don't for one reason or another. And so YouTube has this, I mean, I can just sit there and just think of different things I want to watch.
Check out the Three Tenors' sons. You remember the famous Three Tenors?
Yeah.
Check out their sons. Pavarotti. Check Domingo. Out their sons. All three of them have sons with voices as magical or more magical than their fathers. It will shock you. Just check them out. The Three Tenors' Sons. It'll surprise you.
I think, and I can sing. I can sing pretty good myself. You know, I practice all the time, and I think I hear myself singing, and I think, Blake, you are good. You're really good, and. It's almost like,
well,
you know,
Blake,
I'm
just going to let you go and say thank you for allowing me to be a part of your program. I really do appreciate you, your content, your soul, your great heart. Blake, you're a super fine human being, and it's a pleasure to know you. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you, Doug, for talking with me on my show, and I hope you come back another time. I'll communicate with you by email, text message, and maybe we can work something out in the future, you know. And thank you for all the kind comments. And you are awesome yourself, Doug. I can go on and on, but I know we're short on time. And thanks again.
Thanks.
And how much time do I have left?
You have about 1 minute.
Okay. Well, Doug, I wish you the best. Thank you very much again for everything that you do. Thank you very much for all that you do and for helping make the world a better place, which I know is being noticed from up above. You know what I mean? And I'll just say a quick prayer to the creator of the universe, who we're related to, right? We're God-related, all of us. There's just no other way to look at it other than that, I think, in my opinion. My opinion after all these years of life here on this earth, we're related to God, God-related. We're the spiritual, literally the spiritual offspring of the Creator. And the Creator of the universe, thank you for everything. And there's nothing that exists that you didn't create. I'm very grateful. Thank you for our blessings. Please bless us and protect us, everybody. Thank you. 1,000 thank yous. Talk to you later, Doug. Bye-bye.